HubbardRadio.com and 1500 AM.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
It's been a rough week for Bitcoin.
Oh my gosh, has it ever.
Mt. Gox has gone dark. I'll talk a little bit about that and what's happening there. SanDisk announced a big 128 gigabyte micro SD. Mm-hmm. They're getting more and more and more capacity. DARPA has actually created an open source catalog. And so those of you programmers that like to see some open source code, it's a great catalog to use. I'll talk more about that later in the show. We're going to feature probably the best e-card site on the internet, someecards.com. Mm-hmm. It's actually a fun site. They take vintage pictures, and then they put the funniest captions with them.
Oh, yeah, I know what you mean.
It is a great site. And we're going to feature Ollie and Hattie, the twins, on Profiles in IT. These are two twins.
The Partovies?
The Partovies. Ollie and Hattie Partovi, though, we're going to feature them. They're twin boys, and they've serial entrepreneurs and have been quite successful, both born in Iraq. And lived through the, Iran. Both lived through the Iraq-Iranian war with the Iraq bombing them there in Tel Aviv. And, of course, it was a giant
huge
mailbag.
There's a letter in your mailbox.
Oh, it was huge.
And you
it
know
was
what?
Just a huge, huge.
And Mr. Big Voice was nowhere to help you out.
No,
this
he
week.
Wasn't. He wasn't. It's not close enough to bonus time. We got an email from Chris. I, too, went to No Mo Robo site. This is the one where you can actually get rid of robocalls, and saw that they don't support UMA. However, I checked my UMA account, and UMA does support multi-ringing, and so I tried it out. I set it up to ring at home and also ring on my cell phone, and sure enough, it did give me multi-ring. So it should support No Mo Robo. That is actually quite a good observation. I went to my site, Chris. I UMA site, because I've got UMA. It's that voice over IP system that I've got at home. And that particular site does in fact support multi-ring. So you could actually then have it ring at your house and then also ring with No Mo Robo. And then if it's a call from one of those robo callers, the No Mo Robo will answer first. And so your phone will stop ringing. So it should work for UMA. Now, the disadvantage of doing that with UMA is I'm using my call forwarding feature that if the internet goes out, it forwards to my cell phone. So I'd have to give up that forwarding to my cell phone in the event that my Fios cable goes out at the house. That would be the one disadvantage
to
that.
And that has been known to happen.
Yeah. But, you know, now that I've got a whole blacklist of callers on, you know, UMA supports it. They've got a community blacklist. And then I can also blacklist any of their phone calls. I hardly get any spam calls at home anymore.
That's good.
And actually, I hardly answer my home phone anymore because if you don't know my cell phone, chances are I don't want to talk to you.
I don't even have a home phone anymore, and our Fios plan has a home phone built into it, but the package deal is cheaper than getting a la carte.
Yeah. So that was very good. Well,
I choose not to, no.
Well, I kept my home phone number that I had for years and years with Verizon, and I transferred it to UMA.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like I still have the landline that I've had for the last 20 years. It's just not a Verizon landline anymore. So it's working out quite nicely. And the only people that call us are relatives from 30 years ago that want to reconnect who knew us before we had cell phones.
And who don't have cell phones themselves.
Who don't have cell phones either, and they've got the, you know, they look it up in a handwritten phone directory. Those are the only people that
call
us.
Or the yellow pages.
Or the yellow pages, that's right. We got an email from Arnie McKechnie. Hi, Doc Shirts. What can be done by the average computer or iPad or mobile phone user about this? I saw the story on BBC News that there is a contagious Wi-Fi threat.
Ooh, yes.
It's been created by the University of Liverpool. Also, what do you think about the comment by Verizon that broadband users should pay more for their service? Verizon recently made news when it was accused of throttling Netflix. However, they said they didn't throttle Netflix. There was just some peering congestion. I'll talk about both of these issues.
This Wi-Fi thing was a thing that had to deal with, like, if you went out into a Starbucks or something like that, the problem was that people could get in via the Wi-Fi and steal your personal information, right?
Yeah. Well, this, what it was, people were actually taking control of Wi-Fi hotspots.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are actually uninformed enough not to change the administrative password on your Wi-Fi hotspot, somebody else can log into the hotspot and they can reconfigure it.
Mm-hmm.
Once you log on to a hotspot, you can download new firmware. So what the University of Liverpool did, they went around London and they found people that maybe they set up encryption on their hotspot, but they didn't actually set up the admin password.
Mm-hmm.
And so they logged on to the Wi-Fi hotspot using the default admin password. They downloaded some firmware, and the firmware was then able to capture any kind of passwords or personal information that would be picked up. So then it became a compromised hotspot. Now, what was significant about this particular software is once they downloaded the firmware and infected that hotspot, it looked around for any other hotspots that it was within range of. And if it found one with an unchanged admin password, it would transfer the program to that hotspot, and they would automatically download the firmware to that hotspot. And so it would grow sort of organically in a high-density Wi-Fi area. I mean, most people actually, though, change the admin password. I don't think this is like a huge threat. But it's all the reason that you should use a VPN whenever you're on one of these hotspots.
Mm-hmm.
So now, whenever I go to a hotspot and check my email, I've got this ExpressVPN on my iPhone. I just turn on the VPN and bingo, I'm safe. Only cost me $80 a year.
I bet.
It's really quite nice. Now, as far as this Netflix deal goes, this is one of the problems. Netflix is, now that people are using more and more Netflix, there's an imbalance in traffic. So there could be a lot of incoming traffic coming into the Verizon network from streaming Netflix movies. And with all this net neutrality, they're saying, well, you really can't throttle it or do anything against it, which Verizon said they haven't done. But what is happening, if there's a particular peering link between Verizon and another network, and that other network that they're peering with is sending them a huge amount of traffic, and there's an imbalance, they receive more from this other network than they send, then Verizon says, well, why should I upgrade the capacity of that peering interface if I'm just getting cheated because of an imbalanced load?
Mm-hmm.
So Verizon and the companies are simply not upgrading the peering networks that are imbalanced. So what they say is well, we're actually not throttling it. It's congestion at the peering point, which they could fix if they wanted to.
Right.
And what this is building up to, ultimately Netflix having to pay Verizon something to carry their content.
Yep.
This is what it's – Comcast last week agreed to pay Netflix something in order to carry their content. And there was a comment by Verizon that if Comcast is getting something from Netflix, so should Verizon. I think once Netflix pays that, these peering congestion problems will go away and the Netflix price will go up a little bit. Instead of paying, you know, $8 a month, maybe it'll pay $10 a month.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it seems fair that if you're going to use all that bandwidth, that you should you should, you know, you should pay some of the cost. I don't really think that's particularly unfair. But I think this is just as the internet sort of it's kind of a self-regulation as we decide where the traffic's going to go, where the revenue streams are, how we manage that.
The thing I was thinking about was actually Apple put out a patch last week. Did you see that? There was a problem with taking your Apple device into a Wi-Fi spot, and people were able to hack into it. I forget exactly what the issue was.
It was the secure socket layer.
Right, that's
system.
It.
The secure socket layer allowed you to have a man in the middle, mm-hmm. so that there would be a man. So you'd set up a secure socket link, but when it was established, it was not established initially in an encrypted way. So another server could get between you and the secure server you're talking to for a man in the middle. So all the traffic goes through them, and while it's going through them, it's unencrypted. So they could basically take over and control and get into the device using a man-in-the-middle attack. And this was apparently a pretty serious
It's
been around for a while. Apple released that upgrade. They didn't really talk much about it because
they
just wanted people to get it done so it wouldn't be exploited.
Yep.
Yeah, that's right. That's very good. You're really keeping track of stuff.
I'm trying to tell you.
I'm impressed. So we got an email from James Messick. Dear Tech Talk, I've been looking for a solution that would allow friends to share a large number of pictures with me easily, and I came across DB Inbox. That would be dbinbox.com. And basically, it's an inbox for your Dropbox account. You simply register your Dropbox account on the DB Inbox site. And then it creates an inbox in your Dropbox account, and you can then share that link to your inbox with anybody you want, and they can upload photographs or files to that inbox. And so I've just been having, you know, after like a wedding, James Messick is having people upload photos to his DB inbox, and that it's a very good way to have people send him photos without giving out the password to his Dropbox account,
mm-hmm.
so they can upload it to a particular subdirectory in his Dropbox, and they don't have the password of the account, and that's because you share the password with DB inbox. So I went on. That's actually not a bad idea. So I mm-hmm. went on to that site this morning. I went to DB inbox. I registered my Dropbox account. Within 10 seconds, I had the inbox set up in my Dropbox, and that Dropbox had propagated down to my computer. So it was really set up very quickly, and you just share that link with people. They upload files to that link, and then your Dropbox. Now, James Messick said the problem is that you cannot create subdirectories within Dropbox. So if you've got 10 people uploading images, they're all going to be mixed up together. And so he said what he's done to solve that problem, he's asked people to use a zip file, take all the images, put them in a zip file, and upload one zip file, and then that kind of keeps them separated using the zip. That was actually a great suggestion.
Yeah.
That was a very, very good suggestion from James Messick. What I've done in the past, I've used Flickr. So I went to a class reunion. I set up a Flickr account for the class reunion, and I selected about 5 people who could manage the sort of the upload, and I gave them administrative rights to the Flickr account. So I had 5 people uploading photos to Flickr, and people would email them the photos and upload them. That really not quite as elegant as this, but it worked out okay, and I do like Flickr. It's a free account. You only have to pay if you want to upload a high volume of accounts. James Messick went on to say, I never miss the show. Best of luck, James Messick, the original Tech Talk podcast listener from Kernersville, North Carolina. We got an email from Lauren. Dear Dr. Schertz, I've worked in the IT industry for a decade. I do not code, but I know a lot about software, custom development, and business requirements, and I'd like to become a certified Salesforce administrator. Salesforce.com, of course, is a software-as-a-service application that's used as a CRM, customer relation module. And I found this course called ADM 2001, which I could then study to become a certified Salesforce administrator. It was a 5-day course. Formal training course gave us exercises and books. We clicked our way through more features and functions. There was next to no time spent on educating the student on why we did anything. We just were doing a bunch of stuff. The class was pretty expensive. Yeah, these classes can cost up to $3,000. Wow. I don't know how much this one was, but some of them were quite expensive. I'm amazed at how little I actually got out of it now that it's ended 2 weeks ago. I'm trying to understand the reason why certain things are done to get a certain result. My head is so swimming with features, clicking here and clicking there. I can't really figure out anything meaningful from this thing. Do you have any recommendations on the best way on mastering this application? I've watched a lot of YouTube videos, but I'm still in a fog over relationships between objects and where valuation rules need to be written in relationships, et cetera, et cetera. Do you have any silver bullets up your sleeve? Thanks, Lauren. Well, Lauren, this is the classic problem with certification classes. They basically teach you for the test. And it's like drinking out of a fire hydrant. You memorize a bunch of stuff so you can take the test, but they actually don't necessarily teach you how to do anything useful. It would be like taking a certification test on the Ford motor, on a Ford car. You memorize exactly where the speedometer is, where the odometer is, you know, what the maximum speed is, where the gear shift is. You memorize everything about the instrument panel and the features of the car. You learn everything except how to drive.
Right.
And that's kind of what you have with these certification classes. These are quite good for people that have been used them for a while, understand them, and they just want to, they got to get certified because the contract requires it. And it is nice to sort of go through a quick prep so you've got all the latest lingo and you can pass the test, because there is sort of a testmanship strategy to this, and some people aren't good at it. But if you really want to learn something, it's not necessarily the best way to learn it. So what I recommend is to actually do something and complete some projects. Now, to complete some projects, you need to have, of course, a Salesforce account. And you're thinking, well, how can I do that? Well, here's the thing, Lauren. You can get a free developer account. Almost all of these companies, they love developers. They need developers because the more developers they have, the more software they sell. Like Oracle, you can buy a whole set of all of the Oracle software for like $10, and then you've got all of their programs that they sell. Now, they're crippled in that because you cannot actually, you know, have a lot of records, but you have enough to set up applications. So you go to the free developers account. I've got the link here, events.developerforce.com/signup, and all the developer tools are on a website called developerforce.com, and I'll give you the link there. Now, once you get your new Salesforce account, it's provisioned immediately, and you can begin coding right away. You'll get your simulated environment. You'll have access to a number of features. You'll have direct access to Apex, Visual Force, Force.com integration, APIs, Force.com sites, database services, packaging, chatter, and much more. A number of licenses are provided for these. You've got a Salesforce customer portal license, 2 Salesforce CRM licenses, 2 Salesforce mobile licenses, 3 Salesforce platform licenses, a Salesforce partner license, 10 Salesforce customer portal licensing. You get 5 megabytes of data storage, 20 megabytes of file storage, 5,000 API requests every 24 hours, and a limit of 500 megabyte bandwidth and you get so many service requests every 10 minutes. So it's kind of limited, but this is a great thing. And the developer edition will continue to be available as long as you have some type of activity on your account. Now, you want to actually do something with it. So there's a PDF book called Creating On-Demand Applications, an Introduction to the Apex Platform. And if you go to the developer site, and if you go to force.com and you go to the developer community, go to the developer site, you can look at various things. So you download this, or you could go to the library and you could find a book that's got a particular, you know, a simple application that you could go through, and actually you just start developing the application. This is how you're going to learn it. So this particular manual walks you through a process of creating a recruiting application, and during the process you'll create custom objects, tabs, custom fields, custom formulas, validation rules, page layout, and more. And all the skills that a Force.com administrator should know are covered in this book step by step, and there are probably other books out there. I went to try to find this particular version of this particular one that I'm talking about was published in 2007, And I found a title there this morning with that was similar in name, but I didn't have a chance to go through it all because I was trying to rush to get this response to you. They also you also want to log on to the App Exchange, and the App Exchange is they've got an App Exchange library of applications that are already built for Force.com. You can demo the apps, you can view screen views of them. And there's also another application that's got a lot of resources there, Success Force. And that would be success.salesforce.com. You can check out the guides tab. There are a lot of downloads available, including process maps, implementation guides, and free training presentations. Now, finally, after you've done some of this, you've got your users, you've got your developer account set up, and you're in the middle of doing an application and actually doing something useful, then you could join a user group. And there are there are dozens of user groups. Actually, I looked on the website. There are 162 user groups worldwide. Turns out there are two in Washington, D.C. So just go to usergroup.salesforce.com now and just join a user group. But make certain you're actually doing something already. You know, say you got you're working on your application. You've got something to talk about. So that's really my suggestion. I've never taken these certification classes. When I want to learn something, I just start doing it,
right.
When I wanted to learn database programming, I just created a database application for the school. I wanted to learn PHP programming, I created a website. So that's the best way to learn stuff, and I think in many cases these certification classes are kind of disservice to folks. So I hope that's helpful, and that's how I would approach it, but best of luck. And it was a great question. We got an email from Feroz in Fredericksburg. Dear Doc and Jim, we created a PDF album of our 2013 Hajj journey. Now we'd like to share this album online, something like an online magazine where you can flip the pages easily. We'd like to do this rather than print up 500 copies and send them to everyone. What are the best free options? Love the show, Feroz in Fredericksburg. Well, Feroz, what you need is an application called a flip book. There are a lot of flip books where you can sort of turn the pages like you drag the page over mm-hmm. with your mouse. There are many paid versions online, a lot of them, and they're kind of expensive. Some of them are like $30 a month, they're monthly subscriptions. There are a lot of free options, too, but they're cluttered with these ugly ads and not very attractive. But I found one free option with no ads, and it's absolutely fantastic. I don't really know how they make any money, but it's okay. It's ublisher.com. Instead of publisher, it's youublisher, youblisher, ublisher.com. You simply upload your PDF file, and it just thinks a minute, and then it creates the flip book for you. And send you a link. And then you can just send this link to people and you can turn the pages. It looks like the real page is being turned. It's just incredibly great graphics. This works on it works with an iPad. It works with Android device. It works with a Windows device. It works with Mac. There's no flash involved at all. It's Ublisher is run by Latour and Zuberbauer, a Swiss company, and it's a free service. Now, the only way I can figure that they make any money is that anything you upload to Ublisher is not private. It's shared on the internet. And within about within about an hour, I heard something there. Within about an hour or so, you'll start seeing links showing up on the on Google, and then if you go to your particular flipbook through a Google link, there will be an ad. The flipbook is small, and there'll be an ad to the left. But the link that they give you that you share with your friends, there are no ads on it. It is a fabulous service. Listen, we love all your emails.
We do indeed.
You can email us at techtalk@stratford.edu, and we'll either answer your email directly or we'll cover it on the line.
Now, of course, you gave a lot of information there and a lot of websites. If anybody wants to see those websites, get the direct links, you could get that how?
You can just go to techtalkonline.com, and then you can look at the show. We'll probably get the show posted Monday morning, and all the links will be up there, along with the MP3. You can also sign up for the podcast at techtalkonline.com, or else you can go to Apple iTunes and search for Stratford Tech Talk, and you can subscribe to it through Apple iTunes, and then either way works for you, works for me.
Very good. Saturday morning, Tech Talk Radio. Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2. We'll be right back after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
It's time. Time to put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Masters in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge. It's time. Time to take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu. Or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, it's time to be more.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Yes, today we're going to feature Ali and Hadi Partovi, or Partovi, do you think?
I'm going with Partovi.
Ali and Hadi Partovi. They're co-founders of Code.org. They are serial internet entrepreneurs, and they're currently angel investors. They're twins. The twins, Ali and Hadi, were born in Iran in 1972. They lived under Ayatollah Khomeini's regime during the bloody war with Iraq. The family spent the evenings in darkness, huddled around and hiding as Iraqi planes were bombing the neighborhood. When they were 10, their father gave the boys a Commodore 64 computer. And instead of buying them software or games, the dad did something very clever. He said, "Kids, if you want to have some software, write your own." That was really a great, great suggestion. So they immediately started learning BASIC, and they just read everything they could get about BASIC, which is a computer language. It's very good for your first computer language to learn. And they taught themselves BASIC. By the time they came to America, they were proficient programmers, having taught themselves. Now, early in life, they learned the value of education. They had an advantage. Their dad had started Sharif University, which was Iran's primary technology university. So you can kind of see why the dad said, "Well, listen, kids, just learn programming yourself." So he was actually giving them college training while they were still home.
Right.
Now, in America, when they finally came to America, they didn't have much money. They all shared a single bedroom. The two boys shared a single bedroom in their grandparents' house. Now, the parents, both mom and dad worked together three jobs to provide them a great education. They just had to struggle to do it. The parents sent both boys to Harvard.
Ooh.
To Harvard. They got a BA. They both got a BA, Bachelor of Arts, and a Master of Science in Computer Science by 1974. So the twins got the same degree, same school, BA and MS in Computer Science by 1994. Now, Hadi, now this is when they split up. They were together through school, but then Hadi was hired by the Microsoft Group Program Manager as a Microsoft Group Program Manager for Internet Explorer right after graduation. And Hadi had been working in the summers on internship jobs with Microsoft, so it was kind of natural that he would go to Microsoft. Now, after the release of 5.0, Hadi left Microsoft, and he founded a company called Tell Me Networks. Hadi founded Tell Me Networks. Tell Me Networks was acquired then by Microsoft for a reported $800 million.
Wow.
I mean, that's really hitting
the jackpot. That's a long way from going and living in one bedroom in your grandparents' house.
Now, after they bought Tell Me Networks from Hadi, he returned to Microsoft as general manager of the MSN network, Microsoft Network. And this was he was actually managed MSN.com the only year that it was actually profitable. And that was also the year that they were basically prototyping the software that ultimately became Live.com, which is currently active now. It had a different name then at the time. Now the other twin, Ollie, was on a separate path. After he got his master's degree, he was hired by Oracle as a software consultant in 1994. But in 1996, after about a year and a half, he quit. And Ollie co-founded his own company, Link Exchange, which was acquired by Microsoft for $265 million. I mean, isn't this incredible? These two twins, one hits it rich for $800 million, the other one for $265 million.
And both with Microsoft.
Both with Microsoft. So then, for $265 million. And then Ollie went to work at Microsoft. He worked on a program called Keywords, which was a pilot program which he was developing in a pay-per-placement program for their search engine. It was essentially equivalent to Google AdWords, but Google AdWords didn't come out with their program for a good long while after this. He was kind of ahead of the time. Well, Ollie left Microsoft when Keywords was shut down. Now, that's just stupid. I don't know why Microsoft would have done that. That was just, they just really missed the whole internet boom, I think, back at that time. So then he left Microsoft. Then in 2002, the twins got together. After having, they finally got together, and they co-founded a company called iLike.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Ollie was the CEO, and Hadi was the president. And they created iLike in an effort to reinvent GarageBand.com, which is kind of a streaming music deal, and which Ollie had acquired assets of the company from the original owner. So Ollie had bought, sort of the remnants of GarageBand.com, and they tried to transform it into iLike. iLike created the first successful application on the Facebook platform, and so they were getting huge play on Facebook. And at that time, there was this giant battle going on between Facebook and MySpace. Now, MySpace eventually crashed, but they were competing with each other. So MySpace bought iLike because it was so popular on Facebook that they said, this is going to be our angle. So then the twins were both hired as senior VPs for MySpace in 2009. I couldn't find out how much they sold iLike for to MySpace. That's the $1 thing I couldn't figure out when I was doing the research on this thing. Then in 2010, they both quit MySpace. I mean, MySpace was tanking at that point. And they became angel investors, and they started doing advising to startup companies. Now, their first three companies in their portfolio were three home runs: Facebook, Zappos, and Dropbox.
Wow.
All three made them a boatload of money as angel investors. In January 23, they co-founded Code.org, which is a nonprofit foundation dedicated to growing computer programming education. Code.org plans to spread the word about the shortage of computer programmers and the fact that it's easy to code. You see, I mean, in this country, we got all these people playing games, playing on applications, but not enough people are doing hard programming. And I'll tell you, we need more programmers. And so they're trying to say, look, programming's not that hard. It's just another way of, say, writing. It's just another, a variation of a language. And it's not really that hard. And there's a shortage of programmers. So they're trying to spread the word. They're trying to push coding down into K-12. And what they would like would be computer programming to be included in the core curriculum on K-12. Right along with STEM courses. And this is a real passion for them. You go to the code.org site, it's really quite interesting. And and Hadi was talking about that. He said, that he and Ollie had been talking about this code.org, something that was needed. And it sort of came from the fact that their dad was in education. They're going back to education roots. And they said what happened was when Steve Jobs died at 55, they said, we just ought to do what we want to do instead of talking about it. They said, you know, time is running out for us. And so when Steve Jobs died, it just motivated them to get going. And so they set up this program. It's a nonprofit, 501c3. They just want to give back to the community. This is also supported by all the Silicon Valley crew, because Silicon Valley realized they need programmers to make applications out there. And so they've raised about $10 or $15 million from all the big Silicon Valley firms out there. Now, so far, if you go to code.org, you can just click a button and start writing code. And already 28 million people have written over a billion lines of code using code.org. Now, they've just celebrated their first anniversary, and they've launched a custom Flappy game. Have you heard the game Flappy?
Is this like the Flappy Bird thing?
Flappy Bird thing, mm-hmm. Yeah. And you have to push I heard this was the most popular download. I didn't really use Flappy Bird.
No, I've never done it. But the guy that started Flappy Bird killed it, right?
He pulled it. He pulled Flappy Bird because he thought too many people were wasting their life flapping the wings.
Probably right.
Even though he was making a boatload of money, he pulled it. And so then there are a bunch of Flappy Bird knockoffs coming along.
So this is a Flappy Bird knockoff?
So what this is, no, this is a custom Flappy Bird game, and you code your own rules. So because they're trying to teach programming.
Right.
So you go to this Flappy Bird template, and you code in whatever rules you want, and then you can share your personal Flappy Bird game with your friends.
Wow, so we could all find new ways to waste our time.
So this is a way to get people interested in programming. So there you go. All you want to know about the twins, Ollie and Hottie Partovi.
You know, let's ask Google Translate about that last name.
Okay.
Partovi.
Okay.
Partovi. Okay. All right.
We'll
Thank
go
you.
With that.
Thank you, Miss Google.
Yep. She's always here at the ready. And hope you were paying attention, because your chance to win fine dining prizes coming up here on the Tech Talk Pop Quiz, if you were paying strict attention to what we were just talking about here on Tech Talk Radio, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, and 107.7 FM HD2. More Tech Talk right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Technology is constantly changing. An effective IT manager must not only understand the possibilities and limitations of the technology, but also the requirements and constraints of the business world. Enhance your career today with a master's degree from Stratford University School of Computer Information Systems. Classes are offered day, evening, and weekends to match your busy schedule, and are taught by experienced faculty members with industry experience. Earn your master's degree in as little as 15 months with an accelerated program in software engineering, information systems, information assurance, or telecommunications. Learn more about earning your master's degree from Stratford University at stratford.edu or call 1-800-444-0804. Disclose statements available at stratford.edu/disclosures. Stratford University, 1-800-444-0804.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now, here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for...
The Pop Quiz.
As we know,
yes. So, am I asking the question, or are you going to ask the question?
No, I'm asking the question.
Okay, well, get around to it, would you?
Okay, if you get the right answer to this pop quiz, you'll win two tickets to fine dine at the Escoffier Dining Room or the Karim Dining Room. Now, earlier in the show, I was talking about Ollie and Hottie Parvati, Partovi. Ollie and Hottie Partovi. These are two serial entrepreneurs. They both started their first company, one... you know, while they were quite young. And the same company bought those first two companies that the twins started.
Right.
Which company bought them?
Okay. If you know that answer, you better get to us quickly. And the way to do that, the way that I prefer is dealing with us on the POTS line, your regular old telephone, 877-936-9333. If you're calling from west of the Iran-Iraq border, it's 877-936-9333. Calling from east of Silicon Valley, it's 877-936-9333. And, of course, the wild card line for everybody else is 877-936-9333. But because you like to be difficult, you have another idea.
If you're calling from Siberia, you can reach us on Skype. Simply go to Tech Talk Radio 1, and that'll be forwarded to the studio. Free of charge.
Are still waiting for our first call from Siberia, by the way.
I know, we still are. Oh, you know, we should talk about this. Last week we had the Tech Talk dinner.
Yes, we should talk about
at
that.
At the Escoffier Dining Room, and we invited Tech Talk listeners. We had a whole room full of Tech Talk listeners.
We did
walked
indeed.
Around. We enjoyed the entire evening, and in fact, I brought the drone that night.
You did. Fortunately, there were no fatalities because the drone was not flown indoors.
No, I was really, you know, we checked with our insurance company. They would not let me fly the drone at the school inside because it's all GPS controlled, and inside GPS is a little irregular, and so you get erratic flights. But it was a fun evening, and Chef Jordan and the crew they put out a nice dinner.
It really did. And, I mean, we had hors d'oeuvres, we had a two-course dinner, actually a three-course when you count the dessert, which of course counts.
That's right.
So, and we're going to do this again at some point,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah, we're going to do this on a regular basis. A lot of fun.
Gotcha. We actually have a winner, Doc, so let's go right to that. And, of course, the great thing is, if you win the pop quiz, you can hang on to those tickets, and the next time we have a listener's dinner, you can use
that's
those to
exactly
attend,
right?
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let us go to, line one. This is Jenny. Calling from Alexandria, Virginia. Jenny, good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Dr. Shirt, the question, please.
Yes, earlier in the show, we were talking about Ollie and Hattie Partovi. Which company bought their first startup companies that they had right after, that they started right after school?
Microsoft.
That is correct. You win two tickets to fine dining, the Escoffier Dining Room, the Karim Dining Room.
Very good. Jenny, hang on the line here, because in just a moment, you'll be speaking with Andrew Mitchell, who is the adjunct professor for prize distribution, crowd control, and keeping us on track here at Tech Talk Radio, which apparently we're having a problem with this morning. So hang on there. He'll be right back with you. We are going to be right back in just a moment on Tech Talk Radio. This is, of course, Tech Talk on 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2. More Tech Talk right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Budget analyst, a vice president of sales. These are today's business leaders, and a degree from Stratford University's Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus offers you a powerful path to navigate the corporate world. The School of Business Administration at Stratford University offers both bachelor's and master's degree programs for a real-world education. In fact, many of today's Stratford business grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu. It's time. Time to put your talents out there on your terms and set your own pay. If you are ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Master's in Entrepreneurial Management covers the skills to launch your business from writing a solid business plan to financing, branding, and marketing. Choose from our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge. Contact us today at stratford.edu. Stratford University. It's time to be more.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And let's talk about the website of the week.
Yes.
SomeECards.com.
Mm-hmm.
SomeECards.com. It's a it's probably the most popular e-card site on the internet. It's a combination of deadpan humor and old-timey drawings.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually gets almost 7 million unique visitors a month. The co-founder and head writer, Brooke Lundy, designs the cards to be the antithesis of the musical color bomb e-cards of yesteryear. So what he does, he takes old pictures, old line drawings out of his repertoire of old drawings, and he links up some really interesting and witty captions to those drawings. And sometimes he'll actually crowdsource captions. He'll actually post some pictures up, and he'll ask for suggestions as to what would be some great great captions for these cards, and to pick the best caption.
And some of them can be a little risque.
Some of them can be a little risque. Yeah, there are. They're actually a lot of fun. I really can't. Many of them we can't even cover on the air.
But no.
I've got one example here. There's a woman sitting here at a piano, and she says, "I almost sent you a real birthday card, but thankfully my internet connection came back." So that's like an e-card.
Yeah, that's a clean one we can do on the radio.
That's it. So it is fun to go to SomeEcards.com and see what they have now. Now they like what he likes to say. He says that they play off the minutia of life and they call attention to it in a funny way. Now, actually, the whole site is free, but they do make money occasionally. They create cards for advertisers where they'll feature like Ford or Clorox in one of their cards, and they'll just post that card like a normal Summy card. And so that is one way that they get advertised. They'll also make e-cards for shows like The Walking Dead or the Modern Family, and they'll combine the tone of some e-cards with a voice or plot points of the show and release them online on the same day as the show came out.
That's a pretty creative way to advertise.
Yeah, and so it's not really in-your-face advertising, but it just kind of draws attention.
Mm-hmm.
They typically make 6 to 10 cards a day, depending on what's happening. And it is just a great site. It's fun to go. They've got all the cards sort of categorized by category. It's just fun to look through the thing. And I enjoy that site.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of kind of humorous, and it's not your regular old-style card.
No.
Well, the old Bitcoin
bit the dust, right?
Biting the dust. Mount Gox was, of course, Mount Gox, Mount Gox, was the major Bitcoin exchange, and it went offline on Tuesday of this last week after it suffered a major Bitcoin theft. Now, Mount Gox issued this statement. In the event of recent news reports and the potential repercussions of Mt. Gox operations and market, the decision has been made to close all transactions in order to protect our site and our users. Of course, all the Bitcoins are gone. We are getting ready to close the barn door after the horses have left. Okay, we will be closely monitoring the situation and we'll react accordingly. Well, shortly thereafter, they monitored the empty bank account and they went bankrupt. On Tuesday, all posts had been erased from the Mt. Gox Twitter account.
Oh, my God.
Around mid-morning in the U.S., the company released a statement saying that it closed off all transactions to protect the site and our users. It offered no further details. Now, the price of Bitcoin on the day that they went dark, it fell to $425 by 6 a.m. London time, after having started the day at $545. So it dropped about $100. And then it more or less labeled out. Now, Mt. Gox has been dealing with what they call quote-unquote technical issues in recent days and earlier this month and halted all customer withdrawals of the digital currency after it spotted unusual activity.
Like everybody's money going away?
Yeah, like everybody's money going away. Yeah, people were withdrawing bitcoins without authorization. An unverified document is circulating online that claims Mt. Gox lost 744,000 bitcoins worth $350 million. And so that pretty much put them under. Now, earlier this year, there was another firm called Silk Road 2.
Yeah.
And that was actually laundering drug money.
Yeah.
They suffered a similar loss of bitcoins worth $2.7 million. So the problem is these bitcoins are basically, it's an encryption type of digital currency, and if you've got the encryption key, then you can own the coin. And what happened was the Bitcoin Foundation had been releasing security fixes, which were designed to prevent unauthorized access to Bitcoin accounts. And Mt. Gox had not been updating their website to keep up with the security fixes. So, of course, as soon as the foundation releases a security fix, you can reverse engineer that security fix to see what the exploit is. And then if someone doesn't upgrade their server, you can use that very same exploit to steal the bitcoins.
So it's impossible for them to trace where all this money went.
They can't trace it.
It's gone.
Bitcoins are not traceable. It's an anonymous currency. It's gone.
So
there's nothing they can do.
Won't they figure this out because somebody out there is now going to have – we figure it's probably one entity that stole all this money, right?
Yeah.
Do you think so?
Mm-hmm.
Won't we figure out at some point somebody's got $425 million that didn't belong to them originally?
Well, I mean, if they would just release it, if they try to convert it all at once, but they could just...
How do you convert it back to cash?
You go to an exchange.
Uh-huh.
And you turn... It's an anonymous submission to an exchange.
On an internet exchange.
On an internet exchange, yeah. And so but eventually, if you convert it back to money, they've got to... There would be a money trail once you go back to dollars.
So there's probably a pretty good chance this person or whatever this is going to get caught, right? Don't you think?
I'm not sure about that.
Really?
I'm not too sure about that. Because here's the thing. Somebody puts in a Bitcoin to get exchanged.
Mm-hmm.
And suppose it's a site in Singapore. And so somebody's going to get a commission, say 5% commission to convert the Bitcoin to cash. What do they care where it came from?
Exactly. They just want their money.
They're just going to take the Bitcoin. They're going to exchange. They're going to give them the money. They're going to keep their commission. And it could be in Singapore because these exchanges are all over the world. It's not like it's under the control of one particular country.
And it's electronic. So it's not like somebody's going to walk out with a stack of cash. It's going to go from one account to another, right?
Right, right.
Okay.
See, that's why Silk Road had connected with the drug underworld because they thought they could have this anonymous money laundering.
Wasn't Bitcoin having the same issue? I mean, wasn't it people mostly using this for nefarious reasons? Or
But that was mostly at Silk Road.
At Silk Road.
Mostly at Silk Road. So there you go. Mt. Gox has gone dark and out in – and that, by the way, that's a Japanese site. That site is in Japan.
Gotcha. Doc, let's take a break.
Okay.
This is Tech Talk Radio on 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2. We will have more Tech Talk right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Application and software developers shape our world. Those who design and build these systems are the leaders we follow. The School of Computer Information Systems at Stratford University's Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus offers programs with a real-world, hands-on education. In fact, many of today's Stratford IT grads are working in their chosen field. Make it work for you. Stratford University. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu. A rewarding future as a holistic caregiver or nurse practitioner. Combining the art of caring with the human science makes nursing today's breakout field. Stratford University's School of Nursing at the Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus offers a patient-centered approach with valuable core clinical training. Stratford provides a real-world education in nursing. In fact, many of today's Stratford nursing grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I did have one conversation at the Tech Talk dinner.
Yes.
And one of the gentlemen still has running XP, Windows XP. Now, as we all know, Windows XP is going to be retired April 8th, 2014. So it's just about a month away when it's retired.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what retirement means at Microsoft is that they're no longer going to issue security updates. So that if you've got an XP operating system and you go on the internet, you're not going to get any further updates after that, security updates. And that is going to create a problem because, A, XP is not as secure as the more recent operating systems. For instance, in 2012, the XP, according to Microsoft, the XP infection rate was 11 machines per 1,000 scanned by the company's security software, as compared to 4.5 machines for Windows 7 and 3.3 machines per 1,000 for Windows 7 SP1. 64-bit. So it's got about twice the infection rate as the other operating system. But here's the problem. Once they stop issuing security updates for Windows XP, every time a security update is issued for Windows 7 or Windows 8, the hackers are going to reverse engineer it. And chances are some of those exploits are going to work for XP. So future updates on the other operating systems are going to be a roadmap for penetrating the XP operating system. And there are a lot of folks in Asia, in China, that have XP that are not going to upgrade. So there are literally hundreds of thousands of XP machines out there, which make them a very rich target for botnets. So I believe that XP is going to be exploited quite dramatically after the retirement. So if you've got an XP machine, you should either not connect it to the internet, and there are a lot of dedicated applications that use XP that don't need internet access, so just keep the internet away. Some companies are actually putting all their XP machines on a separate network so they can't connect to anything else within the company. But if you're going to be on the internet, you really need to upgrade. And I wouldn't upgrade to Vista, so you're really going to probably upgrade to Windows 7.
Mm-hmm.
So this particular gentleman, he's had his Tech Talk listener, had his computer for about 5 or 6 years. So actually, it has a RAM capacity of 4 gigabytes. So more than likely, he's going to have to upgrade his hardware. Now, the good news is hardware prices have really come down. So I think he could get a pretty nice laptop for around $600.
Yeah, sure.
And then he's not tethered to the desk. So I think he should use this as an opportunity to upgrade and get a a laptop that he could take around the house, so he's no longer tethered to a desktop. So it's in a sense an opportunity, but I think it is a with some urgency that something needs to be done if he plans to surf the web very much. SanDisk is coming out with 128 gigabyte micro SD. They announced that last month. Now, previously, the higher capacity for a micro SD was 64 gigabyte. In order to do this, because I was interested in the technology, how they could do this, they actually are developed an innovative proprietary technique that allows them to stack 16 memory cells vertically. So in order to get more things on that much real estate, they got to go vertical. So they got 16 memory cells stacked vertically.
Wow.
So you start thinking about how many layers that is and what that does to the yield. So as you would expect, this card is more expensive. But now because it's all compressed as it is, it's actually quite fast. It's a Class 10 SD card, so it'll read-write it at 10 megabytes per second. It'll be good. It's sufficient for 1080p video recording. But the 128 gigabyte micro SD is going to sell for $200.
Wow.
Which is about twice the price of just a regular SD card at that rate. So it is compact, but it's expensive if you want to get it. Well, I tell you, this show just ended so quickly. I tell you, what we want you to do is go to the Stratford.edu website and check out their programs. Go to techtalkonline.com. You can download the podcast, check out the show outline. And, of course, you can email us with your questions at techtalk@stratford.edu. And when you talk to Stratford, let them know that you heard about all those programs on Tech Talk Radio.
Thanks for listening. If you tuned in late or missed any part of the show, want to hear it again, you can catch the replay of Tech Talk at 7 o'clock here on Federal News Radio. We'll see you next week.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio on the air at 1500. 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
This is Federal News Radio, and if you're tuning in later today, you're going to hear some sports. First of all, we have coming up later on today, the Caps taking on the Bruins at the TD Garden. That starts at 12:45. The puck drops at 1, and then the Wizards against the 76ers starting at 7:15 tonight. It's going to be sunny and nice today, high close to 40. It is now 39 degrees at 10 o'clock.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News